Blog Talk Radio.
Speed. I tell you, we get no respect. No respect at all. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House, Oldie Tiny Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with
Jay Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and a special welcome to all you Brunswick people who may be tuning in, just finding us there as listed on their website. How cool.
Yeah. And you're accompanied by...
And we're here with...
In a rowboat off the coast of Cuba, it is I, Gar the Ghoul, boy, boy, it's you.
Off the coast of Cuba, that must have been a hell of a rain.
Yeah. Gar is somewhere offshore. We're not exactly sure. Because the whirly cane.
The whirly cane.
Yep.
And I renamed the whirly cane. Instead of Ian, Spleen, which loosely rhymes with Ian. And, to keep it ghouly. Hurricane Spleen.
I like Whirly Cane. I'd like to use that.
I'm not sure if Horrible Horror Productions has that copywritten or not, but that's what I always use. That's what's on the Bozotron 9000 for the past 10 years.
Yep.
I used it once, had a rash for a week.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fogsbane. Some of them hit you. Fogsbane and good old Bob joining us in the chat live.
Dave, some of the mitches you don't want to scratch, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. I found that out too late. Too late.
Yeah.
I tell you.
Yeah. Well, that's a good scratch. Just don't...
That's how it felt, man.
It's okay to scratch, just don't snip your finger. Okay.
Yes, it's kind of like having hemorrhoids and getting into poison ivy and... the same time, and it's a horrible thing. Horrible scenario.
It just sounds worse than a whirly cane.
It's similar in some ways. we got the cramps, man. That's our problem. We have cramps. Writer's cramp.
Yeah.
Now, our story is writers.
As a mad doctor, I prescribed Dale some Midol for that cramp. It might help. I don't know.
Yeah. Nah, I mean, it changes me. In
oh, that's
ways.
Horrible.
Ways I won't discuss. I'll never try that again, let me tell you.
Did you ever try that for your migraines, Gar?
A Midol? No.
Yeah.
No. I haven't tried Pampers either. But,
Anything's worth it, you know. You felt better, but that water gain was just fierce, I'm telling you.
Or smash a finger with a hammer. You'll be so worried about your thumb, you may forget about your
mother. I think I already did that. I told you I have a broken finger now.
There you go.
I did that once by waving to a guy bigger than me with it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you should have put some more up than just that one.
Yeah.
There's where you went wrong.
See,
man.
That's where I went wrong.
Okay.
Got a broken finger. That's what I get for taking headache remedies from you guys. I think I'll stop.
Yeah. With a peace sign, you need two fingers. You need the index finger as well.
Oh, two fingers for a peace sign.
Yeah, two fingers for the peace sign.
Oh.
Must include the index finger at all times. Tonight, it's the Saint, Nero Wolf, and not mystery is my hobby. Instead, we have... We got some fat man. The fat man.
Yeah, some fat guy. Okay, I'm not liking the fact that they're calling a 1951 guy that weighs my weight the fat man. What's going on?
Well, yeah, but he's probably 6 inches shorter than you. That's fatter.
And he was bigger than what the radio show said. Yeah, I can guarantee.
Yeah. Maybe.
I saw the movie. He did a movie in 1950. If he was 238 pounds, if he was 238 pounds, then I'm 12 pounds, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Dean and I are smelt by comparison.
Okay. So maybe add 100 pounds, you know. I hear the TV does that.
In fact, the three of us combined might be svelte compared to him.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's like
And yet, in the movie, he got to dance with Julie London.
How does that work? I want to dance with
never
Julie
seen
London.
Again. She was never seen
again. Well, she was never seen in that scene. How about
he
that?
Ate her, I think. I don't
know. They did the Jersey bounce, and she ended up in New Jersey. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. Maybe he ate her. I don't know.
Well, she showed up later in the hospital as
hungry,
a nurse.
Hungry
I'll
man.
Let that one go.
Oh, no.
I'll let that
man.
Go.
Yeah, please. Please. I stepped in it. Don't let me fall in it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to wipe my shoe and keep going.
Julie London was one beautiful lady, I gotta say. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Okay, so where are we going to go for the first round of our writer's cramp?
What would you like? Gary, you pick this week. Shall we go with Nero? Shall we go with the Sant? Or shall we go with the fat dude?
I like Nero. It keeps you on the... on the edge of your seat, unlike being trapped on a sofa. That one is a real mystery. What
was that?
I don't know. I thought it was Three Stooges. I don't know.
It's some offshore account trying to tap in. Anyway, this story by Nero Wolfe is entitled Case of the Final Page.
I know that case. I never wrote it.
Yeah. Like a congressional page or like a... No.
No.
Page someone would write on. Ah, I see. Falls into our theme. Writers.
Yes.
Woo! With an air date of March 23rd, 1951.
Transcribed. Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure. Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Oh, Fritz. Yeah, I thought it was the outside.
Hello?
Line. Yeah?
Hello?
Yes, thanks. I'll be right down.
Hello?
Damn Boy. Party line.
Hello? Mr. Wolf, will you please hurry?
Hello?
You're well aware that it will avail you nothing to hurry me. Why must the world be in such a rush today?
But the car, it's downstairs waiting. Fritz is all ready.
Let him wait. Isn't it enough that I've agreed against my better judgment to leave the comforts of home to go rushing through the crashing traffic of the city?
To a dinner? That should be an inducement.
Fritz could have prepared a delicious dinner. He has truffles in the pantry.
Well, why did you promise Arthur Merle? You didn't have to accept the invitation.
Quite so. He's an old friend. Besides, he does set an excellent table. It's just that I don't like the traffic.
Traffic? I know why. It's that awful oxygen in the atmosphere outside. It's not the traffic.
Archie, you're talking much too much.
I know, boss. I'm impatient. Would you mind giving me some slight indication that you intend to move from that chair?
Just as soon as I finish this beer.
Sure you wouldn't care for half a dozen sandwiches before we go to dinner?
If we were going anywhere other than to Arthur Merle's, I'd agree with you. He's the only person in the world I know of, except myself, of course, who has a proper appreciation and respect for the art of preparing good food.
Gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
We usually refer to this story as the case of the final page. Under normal circumstances, the last page of a manuscript would be absolutely worthless unless you read all the preceding pages. But in this instance, the final page held the answer to a murder. Without that page, we couldn't arrive at the solution. Actually, we didn't even know the problem. Anyhow, I finally got Nero Wolfe to the lobby of Arthur Merle's apartment building.
Going up. Going up. Up, please. Are you going up, gentlemen?
Are you, honey?
Certainly. It's my job.
Then so are we. After you, boss.
When did they install women elevator operators in this building?
I've been here for 2 years. Floor, please.
Arthur Merle's apartment, I believe it's 814.
That's right. Are you Mr. Wolfe?
No, this is Mr. Wolfe. I'm Archie Goodwin.
Although the name Wolfe would be much more appropriate for him than for me.
How did you know he was Mr. Wolfe?
Mr. Merle came in half an hour ago. He mentioned that he was expecting you.
You see, Archie, you rush me unnecessarily. We practically preceded him here, and we'll probably have to wait interminably for dinner.
I just hate to be late.
Arthur Merle has never been on time in his life. He's no more punctual than any other writer. He's never been known to meet a deadline on time.
This is your floor, gentlemen. Arthur Merle is just down the hall to the right, 814.
Thank you. And by the way, I want to compliment you on your congenial attitude, miss. I'll speak to management.
Oh, thank you, sir. Decent of you.
What's your name, huh?
Women are usurping everything.
Really cost to live here. Merle's really in the chips?
Every book he writes sells a million copies.
Remember the last time we had dinner with Arthur Merle?
I do. Delicious. Mountain quail. Shot them himself.
Yeah, he's quite a marksman.
Archie, such proficiency as Arthur Merle displayed in hunting is evidence of a wasted life.
Sure, he probably never made over $500,000 a year in his whole life.
Well, ring again. Don't just stand there.
Surely he's expecting us.
The elevator operator said he was?
Yeah, she seemed quite well informed.
If I were a judge of women, which I'm not, I'd say she has a line on every male in the building.
She can get a line on me anytime she wants.
Archie, your insatiable interest in the female seems sometimes to border on the psychopathic.
You know a more pleasant way to go crazy?
Phooey.
It's strange. There's a light on in there. I can see it under the door. Shall I try the door?
Do so, Archie.
Thank you.
Unlocked. Well, at least we can get in. He may be in the bedroom.
Probably in the kitchen.
I'll just sit here. I must forgo the comforts of my own home. I certainly intend to avail myself of the comforts of Arthur Merle's. Very much over-decorated.
You wouldn't like heaven unless they had orchids and beer.
Not a chair in the place worthy of the name. Well, I'll try that divan while you have a look around.
For what?
Arthur Merle, of course. Suppose you have a look in the study. Maybe writing. Have a look, my boy. I'm exhausted and thirsty. See if he has any...
Boss!
Good heavens, Archie. Don't shout. I'm coming.
It's Arthur Merle. Look, slumped over his desk. A knife in his back.
Yeah. He's quite dead. You haven't touched anything.
Certainly not. I've been around long enough to know that.
Well, you just call Inspector Kramer at homicide.
How long do you think he's been dead? I'd say a half hour.
From all appearances, yes. And perhaps only 10 minutes.
I can't understand it. Why would anyone want to kill Arthur Merle? Everybody liked him. Nice man I'd expect such a thing to happen to.
The answer is probably a considerable distance from the question, Archie.
Inspector Kramer, homicide.
Archie Goodwin, Inspector. Just a minute. Nero Wolfe wants to speak to you.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you two have stirred up something on a night like this. It's 10 below 0.
I'm sorry. Here you are, boss.
Hello, Inspector.
Yes. What is it this time, Wolfe? Find a dead body on the Grant's tomb?
I'm sorry you'll forgive any apparent failure to find humor in your little witticism. But I'm at Arthur Merle's apartment. I suggest you come here at once. Seems that Arthur finally met a deadline.
So you just walked in here and found Merle dead, huh?
We were invited here for dinner.
Anyone else around when you got here?
No.
You see anyone, Goodwin?
Only the elevator operator who brought us up.
Well, Mr. Wolfe, since you were in on the ground floor, maybe you've got some ideas.
Sorry, Inspector. Had I been able to solve the crime so soon, I would have advised you, Inspector.
Yeah. Well, It's obviously murder.
Obviously.
You knew him well?
Quite well.
Ever know of his being in any trouble?
No.
Everybody liked him. Arthur Merle, I felt, didn't have an enemy in the world.
Is that so? I don't think anybody pulled this as a little friendly gesture.
Don't jump to conclusions, Inspector. That this murder was committed necessarily by an enemy of Merle's.
Meaning?
It could have been an absolute stranger.
A woman?
Or a burglar, or a madman, or a crank, or... As far as we know, it could have been anybody in the city, Inspector. Arthur's been dead nearly an hour. And an hour ago, I was in my own home, sitting comfortably in my own big easy chair, drinking a delectable glass of beer. Someone at the door, Archie.
Yeah, just a minute. I'll answer that.
Mr. Merle?
No.
Well, is Mr. Merle here?
Yes, he's here. But he's not seeing anyone.
Well, he's expecting me. I'm from the Serve-Rite Catering Company. We're ready to serve for four here tonight.
The dinner has been canceled.
Oh, but it's been ordered. Breast of guinea hen, cooked in wine and cloves. Delicious. It's prepared and waiting. I'm afraid that I must insist on seeing Mr. Merle.
Mr. Merle has been murdered.
Well, I'm afraid I must... Murdered? Well, oh, my goodness, but... Well, in that case, I... Yes, good evening.
Don't you think you might have taken a bit more time with the fellow, Inspector?
Why?
You might at least have let him serve the dinner. Guinea hen, wine, and cloves sounded positively delectably...
Look, I've had dinner.
I'm afraid you're too busy, Inspector. So busy that you've just passed up an extremely interesting bit of information.
What are you talking about, Wolf?
He said he was to serve dinner for four.
Well?
Arthur Merle, Archie, and myself are only three.
Well, who else was supposed to be here?
A fourth guest who either hasn't arrived yet or who arrived earlier and left.
Oh, I see what you mean, Wolf.
Good. In that case, I'll leave you to pursue your deductions from that premise. Archie, will you please stay with the inspector and be of any help that you can? As for myself, I'm going back to my own home, which I should never have left in the first place.
Okay, that finishes the apartment search, Goodwin.
And what have we?
Nothing, except that Merle had over $300 in his pocket, and he was wearing a ring worth a couple of thousand, so it couldn't have been robbery. And I don't think it was premeditated murder.
Why not?
The weapon. Obviously, if someone had planned on killing Merle, he'd have prepared it better. Used a better weapon than a blunt paper knife. No, as I see it, someone was here before you and Wolf arrived, and for some reason that person found it necessary to kill Merle, and he did it on the spur of the moment.
I'm listening.
Well, it's obvious. Merle was slumped over his typewriter. The sheet of paper was in it. He'd been working.
May I see it?
Yeah.
Starbreaker. Strange title. Page 189, he was getting well along with his latest mystery.
Apparently.
Okay. Gregory Thorne slipped the paper into his pocket. It was just an ordinary piece of paper, but Gregory knew its value. Used properly, as Greg knew how to use it, it would be worth $100,000. He walked away briskly, and as he... That's all.
Yeah, that's all. Must have been writing.
You know, I'd like to read the rest of it.
We didn't find any more of it.
Any other ideas?
No, at the moment we seem to be right where the murderer himself left off it. Oh, what is this, open house?
Sorry to be so... Oh.
Oh, what?
I expected to see Mr. Merle. Is he here?
Well, who are you?
Cynthia Roberts.
He expecting you?
Well, no. That is...
Come on in, Miss Roberts.
Thank you.
Maybe the young lady is trying to say that he didn't have to expect her. Maybe she felt free to call without advance notice, Inspector.
Inspector?
What did you want to see Mr. Merle about?
I'm his fiancé.
Oh.
Had dinner yet, Miss Roberts?
Why, yes, I had dinner earlier.
When were you last here, Miss Roberts?
Last night, after the theater. Arthur and I were... What's the matter? Is something wrong?
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Miss Roberts, but Arthur Merle was murdered. And you say you hadn't talked to Mr. Merle all evening. Is that right, Miss Roberts?
Yes, that's right.
You didn't have a date with him tonight?
Oh, no.
Then why did you come here?
I told you we were engaged. I just came by, that's all.
I see.
Any more questions, Inspector?
None for the present. How about you, Goodwin?
Nope. But maybe Wolf. Let me call him.
Yes, I guess under the circumstances, we can't very well leave him out. Go ahead.
Oh, Arthur, I just can't believe it. Why would anyone want to kill him?
That, Miss Roberts, is a question we'd all like to know the answer to.
Yeah, Wolf speaking.
Archie, boss, I'm still at Merle's. We haven't found out anything new except that Arthur's fiancée dropped in a few minutes ago.
Did she know anything of interest?
I don't think so.
What does the inspector plan to do about it?
Just a minute. He wants to know what you're going to do with her.
Well, hold her, of course.
He's going to hold her.
Let me speak to him.
Okay. He wants to talk to you, Inspector.
All right. Hello.
Inspector, I suggest you let the young lady go.
Are you crazy? I haven't got enough suspects in this deal to be letting the hottest one go free.
You can't consider her a suspect simply because she knew Arthur.
Now, see here, Wolf.
If you go around arresting people at random, you'll suddenly be tipping your hand to the real murderer, admitting that you don't have a real clue to go on.
And just what do you suggest?
Find a motive, Inspector. Find a motive. Then, if you stumble on a suspect, you'll have some basis for making an arrest. At the moment, I suggest that you let the girl go and tell Archie to stop wasting his time down there and come home at once.
So that's the story, boss. We went over that place with a fine-tooth comb. Nothing. There's not a single suspect. The last person to see Arthur alive was the elevator girl.
Correction, Archie. The last person to see Arthur Merle alive was the person who ended his life.
Well, I just can't imagine that pretty little elevator gal.
You don't solve crimes by imagination, Archie.
Then there's Cynthia Roberts, his fiancée.
You suspect her?
Not exactly, but just suppose she did have a motive. Maybe he threw her over. Wouldn't it have been very clever of her to come back to Arthur's apartment after the police arrived, allegedly looking for him?
I thought you were the admirer of the fairer sex, Archie. So far, the best you can do is practically accuse the elevator girl and Arthur's fiancée of murder.
Well, who else is there? Certainly the fellow who came with the food doesn't count. I repeat, who else is there?
The entire population of the city, Archie.
Thanks. Well, that's all I get. Oh, there was something else.
What?
This. Page 189 of what appears to be Arthur's latest novel. It was in his typewriter. As you can see, he just started the page.
Starbreaker. Very interesting. What's the rest of it?
It's all we found.
What? And there was something missing. Archie.
Yes, boss?
First thing tomorrow morning, get the address of Mr. Morton, who publishes Arthur's books. Then get over to see him right away.
Interesting stuff. Will Archie save the day? Find out.
Wow. No. You really need a motive to kill somebody? What is this?
Unless you're a car, they're automotive.
It could have been an accident.
Ouch.
Could have been an accident.
Could have been like this.
Could have been a goat.
Yep.
That's right.
Could have been a goat.
All hail.
Except they don't
goat.
Have thumbs. Except they don't have thumbs. No thumbs.
Tongs? Thongs? Oh, geez.
Well, just makes it harder to shoot a pistol, that's all. Yeah, without a thumb, it's harder to shoot a pistol. Yeah. I agree. Yep.
Yeah, it is. I'll agree.
Sorry. Sorry, Sergeant. I'm all thumbs.
Yeah. Hard to operate that way.
Yeah.
So this thing is going to be a mystery all the way to the end, which is great. I love a story that does that.
Yeah. They don't give it away too soon. They're all over the
no.
place with this one.
No. And
you know, and Nero Wolf is a lot like the Sherlock Holmes tales that, although as many times is out there for you to see, he never explains anything till the very end when he lays it all out, you know?
If Sherlock Holmes was his brother, the fat guy. Yeah.
His big brother.
Yeah, that was so crazy. I don't think in any of the Basil Rathbone films, none of them introduced the brother. And so it's only
But in the radio show, it did, though. There were a couple times.
Yes,
including the missing submarine plans, yes. Oh. The Bruce Partington plans.
Mm-hmm.
So this.
Yeah. So it was weird. My exposure to Sherlock Holmes was to the Basel films, and not a hint of the brother in those.
Nope.
Only to find
Inspector Lestrade, it was Inspector Lestrade, who was in maybe a half dozen of the short stories, was in three quarters of the movies, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
In one of the tales of Sherlock Holmes, he meets his brother, and him and Watson are there, and I think it's the first time Watson ever met the guy, and Sherlock meets his brother by saying, "Okay, let's check our wager." And they both had a wager on, due to his obesity, when the brother would die.
Jeez.
And that was how they met.
Still
it's
alive.
Like, okay, so
I'm still alive. You lose, Sherlock. Yes.
I know. Yeah. So it was like, you know, and then the brother orders like 68 pastries and half of a ham and says, "We'll see what happens by lunchtime."
There you go. I like that guy right now. Right there. That did it. That sealed it.
The Sherlock Holmes brother, man, that guy shook me to definitely gave me a laugh.
Well, not too many laughs here. A lot of mystery, and Nero Wolfe is just
playing, lot of mystery.
Playing it cool.
Yep. And yeah, so that's where we're at.
There it is.
Playing it as cool as a corpse.
Yep. All he wants is his dinner and his beer, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, that's it. And his orchids or something, and not leave home. Sounds like me. Bobbity boop boop boop.
Yep, okay. We're all becoming hermits. And we're going to live in a cave.
I was a hermit before everybody became a hermit. I don't know what the big to-do was. I was like, no, I'm staying home anyway. I'm saving so much on gas. Once I get married, my gas bill's going to go out of the roof as far as going all over the place, I guess.
Man,
maybe.
You two want to talk about saving on gas. Whew. I had a long commute. This is cool. Working from home.
I thought you didn't have a long commute anymore. Aren't you staying home?
Yeah,
commute is to the basement.
Yeah, my commute is to the basement now.
Wow. But
wife always tells me, don't get lost.
Despair. Yes, 13 steps of despair. Is that what?
No, not really. Not really.
Oh,
it's nice not having to commute. My commute is like hooking up a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
and my Wi-Fi.
You have to trudgingly walk down into the basement every day. I'm like, all this job. Oh, this job.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, some of my jobs, 9,628.
Yes.
were to as a shipping clerk. Now, you can't do that at home.
Were you the head cluck? Sorry.
I was a head cluck. That's right.
Yes.
I was a head cluck.
You know where that came from.
Yes.
You know where I got that from, right?
Chicken Man?
Oh, that was Spanky McFarland. He was his dad was saying, "I'm a clerk. And I'm in charge of all these men." Oh, are you the head clerk, Dad? It was one of them when Spanky was really little. Really little.
Oh, my gosh. It's so crazy to see those and they're really little. And then give them like 2 years and they're like half grown up. And, of course, that expanded their dialogue, too. So, yeah.
I think that Spanky and Stiney, when they were really tiny, were very gifted at memorizing dialogue and
they
had a lot of personality, both of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were freaking adorable. I know. Yeah. No Ballman.
On a personality.
So, yeah. I haven't seen the Little Rascals in maybe 10, 15 years. I need to go back.
I don't think they show them on television. I don't think they show them on television. They don't show them on television.
Yeah, they're on the YouTubes. And they probably are on some, like Pluto probably plays there or something.
Pluto's got a few channels of it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah.
Pluto rocks.
Yeah.
You can find out darn near anything.
If you want to Yeah, if you wanna check out retro, retro is now a thing.
Yeah.
I think retro has always been a thing.
Retro, the new thing.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah, there you go. I don't have my. I am not near my boinger, so no boinger for you. But
good thing keep you from being arrested.
Oh, yeah. Right. Overuse of the boinger. Yeah.
Indecent boinging. Yeah.
I don't think there is such a thing. But,
What, a decent boinging?
Yeah.
Who? That one. If you'd seen some of the boinging I've seen, then you would definitely not say that.
Alrighty.
That's why I'm staying home. That's why I'm staying home. Yeah, but okay.
Yep.
Go get my boinger. What he said. That's right.
Yeah. Don't leave without your boinger. A whole lot of radio is right. Let's get back to the fat men of the night. Nero Wolf, Case of the Final Page.
Yes, may I help you?
I'd like to see Mr. Morton.
Did you have an appointment?
Tell him I'm from Homicide.
Yes, sir.
Yes?
Mr. Morton, I know you have someone with you, but there's a gentleman here from the Homicide Bureau. He wants to see you.
Tell him I work for Nero Wolf. My name's Goodwin.
His name is Goodwin.
Send him in.
Yes, thank you. You may go right in, sir. The large door to your right.
Thanks.
Come in, Mr. Goodwin. Come in. I understand you're from Homicide.
Not exactly. I'm Nero Wolf's assistant. We're working with Inspector Kramer.
And what can I do for you?
You've heard about Arthur Merle.
Yes, I received the word when I came in this morning. It was a great shock. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Goodwin. This gentleman is Henry Childs.
How do you do, Mr. Childs?
Glad to meet you, Mr. Goodwin. You're with Nero Wolf?
I'm his, his assistant, Man Friday.
Mr. Childs is a publicity agent. He handled all publicity for Arthur Merle.
I've not only lost an excellent client, but a very good friend. Did you know Mr. Merle?
Yes, I'd met him a number of times with Mr. Wolf.
Yes, indeed. Arthur Merle was a great writer and a fine citizen. He'll be missed by millions. Mr. Goodwin, when was the murder discovered?
Last night, shortly before dinner.
Well, what did the police... what do you think the motive was?
Don't know as yet, Mr. Childs. A little early for that.
Well, it's certainly a shame.
I wanted to ask you a few questions, Mr. Morton, privately. I hope you don't mind, Mr. Childs.
Oh, no, not at all. I was about to leave. I'll run along now, Mr. Morton.
See you again soon, Mr. Childs.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Well, Mr. Goodwin?
You did a lot of business with Mr. Merle, Mr. Morton?
I published every one of his novels for the past 8 years.
And you intended to publish his new one, the one he was working on?
Yes, we had a contract.
The usual agreement between you.
Naturally. Although I didn't know the story, I was always sure that if Arthur wrote it, it was good. Mr. Merle's name on the novel was a guarantee that it would sell 1 million copies.
You don't know what this last one was about.
Haven't the faintest idea. We relied completely on Arthur's judgment.
Not even any carbon copies, huh?
Not that I know of. Why?
When Mr. Merle was killed, the only thing missing from his apartment was the novel.
The novel?
The first 188 pages. All we found of it were a few lines of page 189 in his typewriter. He must have been working on it when the murderer stabbed him. The rest of it's gone.
You mean, Goodwin, the novel's gone? This will cost me $1 million.
Well, it cost Arthur Merle his life.
Arthur Merle dead and his novel gone. I can hardly believe it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Morton.
I hope I've been of some help, although
You haven't. But we may call on you again. Before it's over, you may be a great help.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Archie, boss. I just finished with Morton. He doesn't know a thing. Merle never discussed his stories with anyone, and as far as Morton knows, he never made carbons.
I see.
Where do I go from here, boss?
See Cynthia Roberts.
Oh, then you haven't dismissed the possibility that she may have had something to do with it.
Being his fiancée, she probably knows more about Arthur than anyone else. She may know who the fourth guest was to have been last night. And she also may know what Merle's novel was about.
Right, boss. I'm anxious to know what the novel was about, too.
I personally don't give a hang what the novel was about. What I want to find out is someone who does know the story. Because I have a hunch that whoever knows that is the person who killed Arthur Merle.
Mr. Miss Roberts, I know you want to help us find out who killed Arthur.
Oh, yes, of course. I'll do anything.
Nero Wolfe and I were invited to have dinner with Arthur Merle last night.
Well, I knew he was having friends in for dinner, but I didn't know who they were.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hoped you'd know whom he invited.
No, he didn't tell me.
Miss Roberts, we have reason to believe that there was to have been a fourth person there last night.
A fourth?
The caterer came to deliver dinner for four. Now, the fourth party never did show up, or else came earlier and left after Arthur was killed.
You mean someone Arthur invited to dinner might have killed him?
Maybe.
Oh, there's no one that I can think of who bore any ill will toward Arthur.
We're convinced that this was done on the spur of the moment. Unpremeditated murder. Arthur Merle suddenly became a threat to someone. Now we've got to find out what the threat was and who was threatened. We'd hoped you could help.
I'm sorry.
Did he ever discuss his new novel with you?
Oh, no. He never talked about his stories until he'd finished them.
So, his latest mystery contains the answer to an even greater mystery. Unless we find the first, they'll both go unanswered.
Mr. Morton?
Yes?
Nero Wolfe speaking.
Oh, yes. Your man Goodwin was here to see me.
I presume you are interested in seeing Merle's murderer brought to justice?
Certainly. Arthur was a close friend of mine.
And his death cost you a best sir, I know. Now, would you be willing to help a bit?
Why, yes, if I...
I prepared a statement for the papers. I want you to call the literary editors first thing in the morning. Here's what I want you to tell them. Got a pencil and paper?
Yeah.
And take this down. Quote, Mr. Carlton Morton announced today that the last work of the late Arthur Merle will be published according to schedule. Fortunately, it was Mr. Merle's custom to furnish his publishers with carbon copies of each day's work. Consequently, with the major portion of his...
Boss! Boss!
Good heaven, Archie. Please don't be so loud.
Look here. In this morning's paper, why, that rat, he lied to me that...
What on earth are you talking about?
That publisher, Morton, he said he didn't have copies of Merle's manuscript, that he didn't know what it was about. And listen to this. Mr. Carlton Morton announced today that the last work of the late Arthur Merle will be published according to schedule. Fortunately, it was Mr. Merle's custom to furnish his publisher with carbon copies of each day's work. Consequently, with a major portion of his latest work, Starbreaker, in the hands of his publisher, together with a complete synopsis, including the denouement, it will be possible for a ghostwriter to complete the novel. It will be published posthumously in proceeds with... Boss, did you hear that?
I did, and it couldn't have been more to my liking if I'd written it myself. Now, excuse me. I want to make a telephone call.
Who?
Publisher Morton.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see. He lied about the whole thing. I still don't see why he'd kill Merle, but on...
Hello, Mr. Morton. This is Nero Wolfe. Yes, perfect. Now I'll call Kramer, and he and Archie will be waiting for you. Remember now, if anything comes of it, you are to say the manuscript is in the safe in your home, and you steer the party here. Say you've recently rented this place. I hope we'll be seeing you. Yes. Goodbye. Oh, and be careful. Remember what happened to Arthur. The manuscript is in my desk in the middle drawer.
What's it? You mean...
Archie, look out of that window.
Huh? Yeah?
Out there is a city of some 5 million people. In that 5 million, there is one who murdered Arthur Merle. Now, we don't know who it is, so we can't go out and put a finger on him. But, Archie, since we can't go to him... They have only one other choice, make him come to us.
Will you tell me why we're sitting here in the dark in Wolfe's office?
Yes, Inspector Kramer. Mr. Wolfe promised us a caller. Mr. Morton is to pretend that he's rented this place recently.
Well, who's the caller?
Can't tell you until he or she gets here.
You seem certain he'll come.
I'm quite certain.
I'm just hopeful.
You trying to tell me that Morton killed Merle?
You're almost as dense as Archie was. No, Morton didn't do it.
Unless Mr. Wolfe is very wrong, which is doubtful, before the night is over, Morton will know who did. And then it won't be long until we know, too.
You should get on a quiz program. You're so good at guessing games.
Shh. Listen.
Huh? Someone's coming.
A great introduction, my dear Kramer. I hope there are two of them. Inspector, behind these drapes. Quick, I'll get behind the screen.
All right, Mr. Morton. So far, you've been very cooperative. Just keep it up.
I have no intention of doing otherwise. Your gun has me completely convinced, Mr. Child.
Get the manuscript.
Yes, just a moment. It's in my desk.
Wait a minute. I thought you said it was in a safe.
A mistake, Mr. Childs. I don't have a safe. Shall I get the manuscript?
Yes, but no tricks. You be careful.
I'm being exceedingly careful, Mr. Childs. There you are.
Yeah. Starbreaker by Arthur Merle. Yes, this is it. Thank you, Mr. Morton.
Now, I trust that's all you want of me.
I'm sorry. I wish that were true. Unfortunately, you see, it's not the actual novel that I want.
Oh?
My interest in this copy is the same as it was in the original.
And that is?
That no one should ever learn the content.
I take it you know what it's about, then.
Yes. You see, Mr. Merle made the mistake of telling me when I called a bit early at his apartment for dinner last evening. I was forced to deprive him of his life once I learned the storyline of this novel. This story must be kept secret.
Why?
Most of you people in the publishing business know me as a public relations and publicity agent for several prominent writers.
Yes?
Actually, I've been as successful as I might in this business. Because a few years ago, I stumbled onto a very neat and foolproof method of blackmail. Unfortunately, Arthur Merle thought of the same thing and based this story on it. If it got out, I'd be exposed and sent to prison. So you can see why I had to stop it, why I had to kill Arthur, and why... Now I'll have to kill you, too.
Oh, child, for heaven's sake.
The contents of these pages condemn me. You know what's in them. Further, I've confessed to murder to you. You don't think I could let you live after that, do you?
Child, you're insane.
I'm sorry that I must repay you for your trouble in such an ungrateful manner. I'm sorry to do this to you,
child,
but I can't...
Child, please, no!
Sorry, Mr. Childs. There wasn't time to ask you to drop the gun.
All right, Mr. Childs. Get your hands up and stay where you are.
Nice going, Mr. Morton.
Who are you?
That took courage, Mr. Morton. Sorry we had to wait so long, but we had to make Mr. Childs here convict himself.
Convict? What do you mean?
We've been waiting here for you, behind the drapes all the time. We heard every word. Mr. Childs, you're under arrest.
Police?
Yes, Mr. Childs. Only one person could have been so anxious over a copy of that novel. That's the person who killed Arthur Merle for the original. And we heard you confess to that.
And that's all we need to convict you.
We didn't have any proof until we set it up for you to make a second try to cover up for the first. Fortunately, the setup worked.
Setup?
Take a look at the rest of the manuscript, Mr. Childs.
What? Oh, the front page is there, all right, but look at the rest.
Why, the blank. They're just blank pages. You didn't have a copy at all.
No, but we certainly got a murderer. Hey, Inspector?
Childs! Childs! Stop, Childs! Stop!
Well, that's one way to avoid standing trial.
Well, Archie, I'm glad you and Kramer got Childs. Some BRP.
It was a clever scheme, boss, making him think there was a copy.
Yes. In a way, though, I wish it hadn't been just a scheme.
Meaning?
I wish there had been a copy of Arthur Merle's novel.
Why? You never read detective stories.
No, but I've drummed up so much curiosity over this one, I'd like to know exactly what that blackmail gimmick really was. Good night, Archie. Ah.
I've been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Don Arthur was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman production and is directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Evelyn Eaton, Peter Leeds, Lucille Alex, Marna Keneally, Herb Butterfield, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you the case of the Telltale Ribbon. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's excitement for you Sunday when talented servicemen compete on the Phil Regan Show. And Sunday on NBC also means another delightful adventure with Cary Grant and Betsy Drake when they star as Mr. and Mrs. Blandings, the proud but bewildered owners of the famous Dream House. The Chimes are your invitation every Sunday to Mr. and Mrs. Blandings. Tomorrow, for excitement, hear Herbert Marshall in The Man Called X on NBC.
There's them there chimes. That's the fat man. The portly yep. man. Yes, yeah, actually Fox the Maine, original. This is issue 309 of Old Time Erie House and 650 all told.
Wow. Where does the time go? Where does the time go?
I don't know. Goes behind us.
I got enough behind me without that.
Hello.
Hello.
I'll
take your word for it.
I suppose there's something we can learn from this, I would imagine.
Well, there's that.
Maybe. Maybe.
Erie House Radio proudly presents another Gar's Moral of the Story.
It's said that the pen is mightier than the sword, unless the other guy actually has a sword, in which case, run!
Hey, it's better than Mr. Lonely.
They didn't...
I like Mr. Lonely.
Did you know, they didn't even introduce the killer until halfway through the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Which is good. Keep you on the edge of your seat.
It was a good mystery, yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah. Or, you know.
I am with you. I think that keep the mystery a mystery.
I was on the edge of my seat, except I'm in a rowboat off the coast of Cuba.
Yeah. If you're on the edge of your seat, you may end up in the water. Yeah.
That's right. I might get wet.
Just put it on YouTube. We want to see it.
Okay. Sidebar to the YouTube thing. What was this? Is there was a report in Naples that a woman looked outside of her window and that there was a shark swimming down the street. Only to be debunked later is like someone was having fun with an editing program. I was contacted by someone or somehow, I don't know, and they were like, oh, did you see it? And I was like, yeah, right. Sure. Uh-huh, yeah. Because they took it as it was a real deal, and I was like, sure.
Well, on the internet, it had to be real.
Yeah.
That's right, the internet, it has to be real.
They made a movie about it, it's got to be real.
Yeah, Sharknado. We had Gatornados, Sharknados, and I made up a new one called the Natornado, and someone said, who's Nader? And I was like, Ralph Nader. You don't know who Ralph Nader is? I was like, is he still alive? Yes, he's still alive. And he's apparently a Natornado off the coast of Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, Natornado.
Natornado.
There you go. Coming soon to the Sci-Fi Network, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
As it should. So that was our first tale.
Ooh.
It had a tail.
It had a tail. That was a tail.
And a hat. And a hat.
And a hat. And a pen.
Yeah.
And a typewriter.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well,
Let's
continue now with, we might as well just keep the heaviness
go
going.
To sleep.
Another heavy tale.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yep. What's funny is Sidney Greenstreet, of course, the guy that did Dashiell Hammett, who created the Maltese Falcon, which was the first time Sidney Greenstreet, I think it was one of his first films, even though he'd been on stage for years. And he was the fat, Casper Gutman, the fat man in that. And it was later on, Dashiell Hammett created the fat man for radio. And
so, who created the thin man? Because it's the same guy.
Dashiell Hammett. Yeah,
there you go.
Hammett.
There you go.
Yep.
the thin man, the fat man,
and the one in between. Yep, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He's,
and don't
and
mess
the
with
regular
Mr. In between.
Guy. Yeah. The regular guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regular.
Yeah.
Regular now at my age means something completely different. Something I pray for.
That's it.
It means
yeah.
you get up only two times at night. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Just to be right. a regular yeah. guy. Yeah.
And don't trip over your bed.
Or the cat.
Yeah. Or the cat. Or the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing is everything needs a hook. Yeah. And a scare.
Arrgh.
Oh, yes.
Arrgh. Yeah.
Arrgh.
So we got to go to sleep with this next one, right?
No. Why would we go to sleep?
Well, the name of the title.
Ah, duh.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
The Nightmare Murder.
Yeah, where you wish you hadn't gone to sleep when you have a nightmare, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think of it as a free horror movie.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, be that way.
There you go.
Sure.
No, I had
sure.
that as a kid. That was my therapy. I would wake up and go, free movie. Not bad.
What if you woke up because a goat yelled in your ear? Oh, that would be horrible. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
If he yelled in my ear, we would be grilling goat burgers.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, goat, stop yelling in my ear over here. What are you doing with the yelling?
See this? It's a growl.
Wow.
What the episode just says, Archie, stop yelling in my ear. Goat burgers.
Some burgers. Some goat burgers. Yep, yep.
Goes with goat chips.
Hey, we got a lot of radio.
Yeah, we do. That we do, and let's go ahead and continue then with The Fat Man, The Nightmare Murder, originally broadcast way back in...
January 17th, 1951.
Episode 153.
Here comes The Fat Man in The Nightmare Murder, starring J. Scott Smart.
Hey.
Cue the goat.
There he goes. He's stepping on the stairs. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man. It takes a good man to make a first-class old-fashioned... You have to muddle the sugar, bitters, and water properly, then toss in the ice and whiskey, and then carefully twist the lemon peel on top. Like anything else, it's simply a matter of following the recipe. But here's another illustration. If you take a liberal jigger of motive, add a slice of opportunity and a dash of means, and then pile a dozen or more old-fashions on top of this, you're quite likely to end up with a real gruesome hangover. Murder. Like any solid, normal, routine job, this one began in my office. It was just after lunch. My feet were on the desk. I was munching a peppermint. I'd propped the latest edition just south of the bulge that marks the last resting place of a brace of breaded pork chop when the phone rang. Runyon speaking.
The detective?
That's a debatable point, but I like to think so. Who's this?
My name's George Dutton. Maybe you've heard of me.
Oh, you mean the author?
Well, that's a debatable point, too. I write mystery stories.
Yes, I know. About private eyes who get hit on the head.
Look, I've never had any need for a private eye. I don't even know what one looks like. I never even saw a pistol or a gangster or a corpse until last night. A corpse, that is.
Wait a minute. Let's take this in secret. Are you hiring me?
Maybe. How much?
$50 in expenses.
Well, that's a lot, but I need you pretty badly.
What's the trouble?
I killed a girl last night. I want you to prove it.
Say that again and slower.
You better come down here right away.
Where are you?
Melville Hospital. Alcoholic ward.
The closest I'd ever been to the alcoholic ward at Melville was reading The Lost Weekend. After I convinced them I wasn't a prospective client, they gave me some of the dope on George Dutton. Their assumption was his writer's imagination had picked up an Italian collaborator during the period in question, namely a batch of martinis.
Runyon?
Yeah. What can I do for you, George?
Sit down. On the bed. Don't take it easy, will you? My head.
I know what you mean. Is that better?
Yeah. Now, look. You're going to think I'm crazy like the rest of them, but I'm not paying you for an opinion. Here. Here's 2 days' worth, $100.
Thanks. Now, for this, I'm supposed to hang a murder rap on you, huh? Or did I hear it right over the phone?
You did. At least I'll know, Runyon, if it happened. If I killed her, at least I'll know I'm not crazy.
All right,
anything's
George,
better than that kind of doubt, Runyon. Anything.
Now, take it easy, George. Just tell me about it, huh?
Yeah, I know. Calm, collected, lucid, logical, right? Yeah. Okay. I've been working hard, see? Trying to meet my publisher's deadline on the novel. I got tired last night around 7 and went to bed. Dead, wrung out, gone, you know? Now, this I'm sure of. Somewhere around 10 or 11 o'clock, I got up, put on my clothes, and went out for a walk around the block. I just turned the corner when it happened.
What?
I'd seen the car a lot in my neighborhood, a black Buick convertible. I'd seen the girl in it, too. Stunning girl, blonde, eyes like sapphires, figure like... Well,
yeah, I know what you mean. So what?
So she pulled up to the curb and asked me to get in.
How come?
Well, am I so horrible? She did it, that's all.
Okay. Who was she?
I don't know. I don't know anything about her. She handed me a bottle, and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Mistake number one.
Yes, so right. So anyway, we drove around for a while, and I listened to her talk, and pretty soon the bottle was gone, so she pulled out another one, and pretty soon that one was gone, too.
What did she talk about?
Death?
Hmm?
Yeah. It seemed perfectly normal at the time. She was fascinated by death, wrote poems about it, she said, quoted from them all the time. Anyway, things got pretty fuzzy about then. I don't remember much. People, voices, lights. One thing, though, Runyon. One thing. There was a big red rooster about 10 feet high.
Oh, yeah, naturally. Wouldn't be an evening without one. What was his
name?
Now,
wait a minute. A sign, Runyon. A neon sign. I remember it blinking at me while she stopped by the trash can.
What trash can?
How do I know what trash can? A trash can. There was the red rooster and the trash can, and she stopped and took something out of her purse and dropped it in. And there were more lights and more people and more riding in the car, and then pretty soon we were alone. She was pouring drinks for the two of us.
And where was this?
I don't know. You got me. She handed me a glass, see? And raised hers for a toast to death, she said. And I saw she had a gun in her hand, pointing it at her head. I grabbed it, got a hold of it, but it went off.
Oh, great.
Last thing I remember was her lying on the floor, and then the floor was rushing up at me. Well, that's it.
What do you mean, that's it? What happened after that?
Nothing. When I opened my eyes, I was in my own bed, in my own apartment, with my clothes right where I'd left them at 7 the night before. A nightman swears I wasn't out of my room all night. Nobody believed me. They said I dreamed it. I had a couple more drinks, found the cop on the beat and told him, too. That's how I got here. They all think I'm crazy. Well, maybe I am. Maybe I am. But go on. Find out for me, Runyon. Get on it, will you? Get on it.
So I got on it. First, there was a janitor at George's apartment.
Wait, Mr. Runyon. I've been nightman here for 12 years. I know George Dutton as long as he lives here. He couldn't leave this building last night without me seeing him, and I didn't see him. You can take my word. He's not.
Then there was the bartender George had mentioned.
Look, all I know is he come in at an indecent hour this morning, screaming for the hair of the dog that bit him, just like all the other times. Yeah, especially the last time.
What happened last time?
Oh, same thing, a couple of years ago. Only that night he got out of bed and trapped Adolf Hitler in the information booth at Grand Central.
The cop who'd haul him over to Melville said the same thing. Likewise, a couple of newsboys. Verdict, unanimous. George was a lush and a loony. And I was inclined to go along with him. On the theory that a special convertible, complete with blonde, is something even a New Yorker will stop and look at, I quizzed the service stations around George's apartment house. Sure enough, up comes a guy who'd greased its gold-plated chassis only a month before. The record showed it belonged to Olivia Bradshaw at a Park Avenue address that went with the car, so I trotted over. Some kind of a soiree was going on in the huge living room. The butler looked at me, raised his eyebrows one at a time, and finally decided I wouldn't run off with the silver plate and hustle me into the library, which seemed to have another occupant.
As a spirit with yellow eyes gleaming, will I to thy couch come again.
When you say that smile, what is it?
This book, Baudelaire, lousy translation. By the way, I'm Joan Cameron, Lydia's poor country cousin. Who are you? One of Uncle Charles' tribal sycophants?
Oh, I'm not sure what that means, but I don't think so. My name's Brad Runyon.
Oh.
Where is Lydia, by the way?
Out somewhere. You looking for her?
Yeah.
Well, you're just in time. She and Uncle Charles are going abroad, you know. Sailing tonight.
Oh, who's Uncle Charles?
Lydia's guardian. Keep her to the keys to the Bradshaw Exchequer.
Well, that sounds important.
It is.
Oh, and the chips, huh?
Oh, no. He just has a pair of scissors to clip the coupons for Lydia, which, incidentally, is a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And that concludes my dissertation on the Bradshaws. A morbid subject of theirs. Let's talk about you.
Sure, sweetheart. After we talk about a quick way I can get a hold of Uncle Charles.
I beg your pardon?
This friend is Uncle Charles.
Pretty quick. How do you do, Mr. Bradshaw?
Ah, Mr. Runyon, isn't it?
It is. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Strange girl. Now, Mr. Runyon.
I've come on a peculiar errand, Mr. Bradshaw. When do you expect your niece Lydia back?
Oh, in an hour, perhaps two, why?
I wonder if she'd consider making a short visit to Melville Hospital.
Melville? Good heavens, what for?
A client of mine thinks he killed her last night.
Now, just a minute. What kind of nonsense is this?
I know it sounds crazy, but it isn't nonsense. His name's George Dutton, and he's in the alcoholic ward. He fell off the wagon last night, but hard. He has seen your niece riding around in her convertible. She impressed him. So, instead of the usual pink elephants, he had some hallucination about taking a ride with her last night and killing her. We can't talk him out of it.
Well, that's fantastic. What do you want Lydia to do about it?
Well, just stop by the hospital and convince him he's wrong, that's all.
But don't you understand we're sailing for Europe at midnight?
Now, look, this will only take her 10 minutes. It may mean the man's sanity.
Well...
Otherwise, he's liable to be running around to the police and the newspapers.
Well, I'll ask Lydia to drop by.
Good, and thanks. I'll be running along, then. Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Bradshaw.
Quick ending to part two, or part one, rather, of The Fat Man.
I thought it was part seven.
Part seven of eight.
I was counting 17. I don't know. Well, I don't know what happened.
We're doubling things up somewhere.
That whole carry the one, you know, that messes me up sometimes. You know.
They said there'd be no math.
That too. But there might be a land shark because of whirly canes.
Whirly canes.
It's the time. Telegram. Freaking land shark. I love that.
Oh, yeah, the old Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah. Yeah. Land shark.
Candygram.
Oh, man. Candygram. Candygram for Mongo. That too.
Yeah. So this story is building up well.
Zerber-derber.
Are you making something in the microwave? What's that dinging?
Somebody's getting receiving a message on Facebook or something. Not me. I'm way far away from all that stuff. What is this for? Take one for... Okay. All right. Now I don't know what this is.
Ding. Ding.
I'm filling up those little cubicles for drugs.
Hurry up. I got an ice cream man outside here. Come on.
Oh, now you're talking. Trying to create world peace through ice cream.
You're the only guy I know that orders ice cream in winter. Yeah.
And why? I don't understand
what's
why
wrong
that's
with
a
ice?
Problem.
There's nothing wrong with ice. Ice cream in winter, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not disparaging anybody. So, So you wake up and in a room and your clothes are folded and put away and everything's normal, and yet you were out. I've never had a bender like this. Well, no, wait, have I?
You just don't remember.
No, it was a problem with blackouts. Yeah, no, I did. When I was in the military, I would not remember the previous night because I went out on a bender, but I always got on the ship, but I never remembered how I got back there. So, okay, yeah.
You know,
okay.
Did you fold up your clothes nice and stuff?
I don't know.
I would do weird stuff. Like, I lived in a 3-story apartment. I lived on the second floor, and someone was throwing away one of those, you know, those old 70s console TVs that were like a mile long. They were like a big piece of furniture and they had a stereo in them.
Yeah.
Somehow,
we had one of those. Yeah.
Somehow, myself, I hauled it up a level of stairs and brought it into the apartment. And the wife's like, "What is this for? I'm gonna fix it." And I never did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one of those 1960s Curtis Mathis that had the AM/FM turntable and television in it. And the problem with that being, if something went wrong, you lost your entire entertainment system to the repair shop.
Yeah.
Right.
So you didn't have radio, you didn't have television, you didn't have your record player, all because a tube in the radio went out or something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Remember the old TV
tubes? Yes, and the TV tube testers.
Yes, they had them at the drugstore.
Yeah. Yeah.
We would go and test a handful of them, and all right, we need two of these and one of these. All right.
That's right.
My dad would try to fix the TV himself.
Uh-huh.
He used to have his hair used to be straight, but then it decidedly curly over the years.
Uh-huh. Over the year, getting a little bit curlier, buddy. I think that was the advent for the component systems that came out years later. It's like, oh, a component broke. Well, you take the component. You don't have to take your entire TV and everything else out for repair.
Yeah. At worst case, you might lose your what do they call that, equalizer, the sound equalizer.
Right. Or your turntable, or your tape player, or your receiver. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But not all at once.
The progression of home entertainment. From just old-time radio, I mean, really, there was a point when there was nothing else, or a very little TV in the 40s.
Yeah.
Yep. Nice. Movies and radio, that was pretty much it, yeah.
Right. But I was still, like I said, I was still entertained in the 70s with radio at night. When I was a young kid, and I was like, go to bed. Okay, and I'm going to listen to radio, CBS Radio Mystery Theater, every night.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. And we were really... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, just running a little short on time, let's wrap up the Fat Man.
Yes.
The nightmare.
You need a lot of rap for that. A lot of rap for that. A
whole lot of rap for that.
Whole lot of rap.
Well, what's the verdict, Runner? You think I'm nuts now, too, huh?
George, listen. Now, hold of yourself. This doesn't mean you're nuts. Could happen anyway.
Shut up. What was her name?
Lydia Bradshaw.
Bradshaw?
Yeah, and she's coming over here to see you.
Now listen, Runyon, you're working for me. See, you're not working for them.
Wait a minute, George.
You listen to me. I'm telling you this happened. I was there. I wasn't in bed dreaming it. This dame is dead. Do you understand that?
Shut up over there.
I won't shut up.
I'm telling you, kids, you'll go off your rockers.
Now, look, Doc, wait. Look, George. There's no use arguing about it. I talked to her uncle. The girl's coming here. That'll convince you, won't it?
She's not coming here because she's dead. She's dead. I held her with these two arms. I heard the gun go off. I felt her go limp in my arms. In my arms. Oh, no. No.
Right over there.
I'm Lydia Bradshaw.
Well, what about it, George?
You're all right?
What do you mean, Mr. Duff?
Last night we were together, don't you remember?
Well, no. Sorry, I don't. I don't remember ever seeing you before.
Go away.
Come on.
Isn't there anything I can do?
No, you may as well go now.
But the poor man...
You heard what he said. Now go on. Get out of here. Get out.
I'm terribly sorry.
Thanks very much, Miss Bradshaw.
I do hope you'll be all right.
Yeah. Good night.
Goodbye.
Well, George, is that the girl?
Yeah. That's the girl.
So that tied it up. I refunded him $50 of the $100 he gave me, recommended a good psychiatrist, and took off. It was after my dinner time, so I walked toward the East 50s, a little Italian restaurant that makes wonderful lasagna. Suddenly, I found myself looking across the street at a bar on the opposite corner with a blazing red rooster in neon lights. Of course, he could have dreamed this, too. In his heyday, he probably knew every pub in town. But the business of the trash can opposite the entrance, which was right where he said it was pretty accurate dreaming, even for a professional dreamer like George. For this reason, I decided to sacrifice my dignity. I sidled up to the trash can and began probing around. It was there. A slim volume in black Morocco with gold lettering on the cover reading Skyward. Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. I kicked myself for refunding that $50. I stood for a minute in the glow of the red rooster sign and thumbed through the book of poems. Then I went into the bar.
Yes, sir. What do you have?
Make it a beer.
Any special kind?
Well...
Now, how about a tall, cool glass of McCoy's Pale Ale?
That sounds like a commercial.
It is. See the sign up there? Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy.
Okay, I'm sold. Wrong one.
Right.
I quaffed my real McCoy and skimmed through Lydia's Odes to the Dark Angels. Tossing a Morocco-bound book into a trash can, it seemed a strange thing for a girl to do until you read the poetry, whereupon it became clearly the only thing to do. It was so awful, I gave up trying to read it and concentrated on the frontispiece, which, as with all privately printed works, was a picture of the author. Looking at it now, it seemed to me as if I'd seen Lydia Bradshaw somewhere before. Somewhere before she'd walked into George's room at the hospital. But I couldn't put my finger on it.
How about another real McCoy?
No. Wait a minute. Don't go away.
Yeah?
Were you here last night?
Sure. Why?
Here, take a look at this picture. You ever seen her?
Who is she?
Name's Lydia Bradshaw. Was she in here last night?
I don't know, maybe, but I don't remember seeing her. She came in with the after-theater bunch. I wouldn't remember anyway. Marvin here four deep at the bar.
Why, Frank?
Huh? Oh, excuse me, I got
Wait a minute, Frank. What do you mean you don't know Lydia?
Well, I didn't say that, Miss Cameron.
Frank?
I didn't say I don't know her. I only said I wouldn't remember if she was in here during rush hour last night. Excuse me, I got a customer waiting.
Customer, my foot. The liar. Oh, please don't think I'm dogging your footsteps, Mr. Runyon.
How do you happen to come here?
Always do.
You say he knows your cousin, Lydia Bradshaw?
He ought to. She owns the place. Tell me, did you steal that book from the library?
Oh, no. I picked it out of the trash can outside.
What?
Yeah, Scout's on her.
But it's the only one she has left. She'd die before she'd throw it away.
How about afterwards?
What do you mean?
No, just skip it. Here, look at this inscription on the flyleaf. To Greg, someday I'll find you. What does she mean by that?
Greg Stanhope. She used to think she was in love with him. Maybe she was, I don't know. But Uncle Charles decided it was wrong and broke it up. A fatal mistake, I might add.
Why fatal?
They found Greg the next day with a champagne glass in one hand and a gun in the other. He'd shot himself.
Hello, George?
Yeah?
This is Runyon.
What do you waste your time on me for, Runyon? I'm nuts, you know. I'm
now,
crazy.
Now, shut up, George. Take it easy. Ask me a couple of questions. Do you know anybody named Stanhope?
Greg Stanhope?
Yeah.
No, I never heard of him.
Uh-huh. How did you happen to say Greg?
I don't know. It just popped into my head. Greg Stanhope. It goes together somehow. Greg... Wait a minute. I do know. Yeah, she was talking about him last night. That's who she toasted when she raised her glass just before she...
Okay. Now, one more question, George. Did anyone see you leave the building last night?
Well, sure, the janitor.
Anyone else?
No.
Well, look, supposing it went like you said. Suppose someone picked you off the floor at the Bradshaw apartment and brought you home. Is there anyone who'd know exactly where to hang your clothes and straighten out the rest of your apartment besides you?
Sure, the janitor would, but he already told
He's
you.
He's got a couple of sidelines. George, as a writer, this may come as a disappointment to you, but you aren't nuts.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, get your foot out of my door before
I... Now, take it easy, pal. I'm coming in.
I already told you all I know about George Dutton.
That I'm inclined to doubt. Now, sit down, pal. You've had a hard day pushing a broom and raking in cash.
You want I should call a cop? There's a law against breaking into a guy's apartment.
There's also a law against criminal conspiracy.
I said I give it to you this afternoon, all of it. Don't call me no criminal conspiracy because I'm janitor, no criminal, see?
How much did Charles Bradshaw pay you to tell me George wasn't out of his apartment last night?
I don't know nothing, I tell you. Now get out of here.
Now you come clean first. You saw George coming and going. You helped Bradshaw put him to bed last night.
No, I didn't. Honest, I didn't.
You better level with me, Buster, before
no.
I'd knock...
Don't come near me.
Someone had fired through the window and nailed the janitor before I could make him talk. I rushed over, opened the window, and hit the back alley in half a minute flat, but it was too late. The car roared off half a block away, and that was that. I walked back to where the killer must have stood, trying to make sense out of nonsense. I'd run into my share of murders, but this was the first time in my book that someone committed one to cover up another one someone else had confessed to. Now, if that sounds confusing, it's only because it was. A party was going on three floors up. It was nice to know someone was having a good time because I wasn't. I leaned back against the wall and mopped my head. There had to be an answer somewhere. And it was lucky I'd leaned back or I would have been brained. A bottle whistled down three floors and glanced off my shoulder and bounced into some soft rubbish in the alley. I picked it up, looked at the label, and suddenly it hit me. It was an answer from out of the blue. "Don't let them fool you, brother," it said. "Reach for the real McCoy." I found a phone and called the hospital and left instructions for George. Then I hailed a cab and rushed over to Lydia Bradshaw's apartment. What time is it, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw.
It's almost 11. As I told you, Mr. Runyon, Uncle Charles is extremely busy taking care of the baggage and won't have time to talk to you before we
sail. Yeah, sure, I know. How come he forgot that trunk over there, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw. I'm having a tough time with that name. What about that trunk?
It's full of his first editions for the vault while we're gone.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Where was I?
Will you stop reading that stupid book?
Stupid? Listen to this. Astride the cosmic threshold, I gazed back toward the old familiar lighted realm once more. Then resolute to turn my face the new way. Toward the wild, unlighted shore. Three guesses now. Byron, Keats, or Nick Kenny?
I don't know, and I don't care.
Well, you ought to know, baby. You wrote it.
What do you mean, Mr. Runyon?
Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. This mean anything to you?
An empty beer bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. Someone almost brained me with it tonight. McCoy's Pale Ale. Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy. Still don't remember?
Should I?
Yeah. Took me a while, but I did. I wondered why you looked familiar to me.
Me?
Yeah. You two girls, two pictures. One of these girls is Lydia Bradshaw, Park Avenue debutante, and the other is a professional model. Which one is the real McCoy? It was an ad in all the magazines 3 years ago.
Figured out which is which by now, I presume.
Yeah. Why did you play along with him?
Is there any harm in it?
Well, I can think of about six laws you're breaking, not the least of which is criminal conspiracy.
Criminal? What are you...
Just a minute, Lydia. Stay where you are, both of you.
Oh.
My name's not Lydia. Let's stop the pretense.
Gonna make it a double header tonight, Uncle Charles?
I might.
Double what?
Murder.
Murder? What are you...
Shut up.
Murder? I didn't know anything about this. All you said was she killed herself and you wanted to avoid a scandal about suicide.
It was a scandal, all right, but not about suicide, wasn't it, Uncle Charles?
But what was it?
When Lydia killed herself last night, it threw the whole estate into the hands of the executors, opened the books to the accountants. How much had you embezzled, Uncle Charles? A couple of hundred G's, maybe?
More than that, Runyon. But you're wrong on a technicality. Not a scandal, not unless it gets out. And it's not going to get out. I killed once. They can't do any more to me for two or three.
You can't cover it that way, Bradshaw.
No? Watch me, Runyon. Watch me.
Don't, Mr. Bradshaw, no.
Hey, Runyon. Runyon, this is the place.
George,
I'm
you're just in time.
Huh? Who?
You killed him.
No, but he's going to have quite a headache. The McCoy Company puts out a good bottle, too.
Oh.
Catch her?
That's two down. Put her on the sofa, George, while I call headquarters.
Yeah. Lydia Bradshaw.
No. This is the reasonably accurate facsimile. We'll find Lydia Bradshaw in that trunk over there.
Well, then I did kill her.
No, you didn't. She committed suicide, but her guardian didn't dare let it be known, or he'd have been discovered as an embezzler.
What do you mean?
Skip it for now. I need a drink. How about you?
Runyon, if it's all the same to you, I'll take sarsaparilla.
Batman, starring J. Scott Smart, was directed by Clark Andrews. The script was written by Harold Swanton. Heard on tonight's show were Lyle Sudrow as George Dutton and Gertrude Warner as Joan Cameron. The music was composed by Mark Winston. Your announcer, John Lowe. Listen next week to another exciting adventure of the Fat Man. G-Note for Murder.
Choreography by Gene. Not Gene Richardson.
The program came to you from New York.
Gene Simmons wouldn't work. All right. That wraps up The Fat Man. We are short on time. Let us run right on over to the...
Does he get a moral?
Oh, yeah. No. Moral. Right to it. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Don't mess with weird chicks or weird stuff happens. There you go. Next.
Or if you want weird stuff to happen, find you a nice weird chick. All right. Next we have The State, The Frightened Author.
Yes. Good old Vinnie Price.
Yep. Which is even the best for last. This one was originally broadcast
July 23rd, 1951. Sure.
There we go.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. Based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures, the Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
It isn't Randy Patterson.
Oh, Templar, am I ever glad to see you. Just what the psychiatrist ordered. Sit down, old boy. Take a load of... join me in a bowl of porridge.
Oh, thanks, but I...
sirree, am I ever glad to see you. A sight for these bloodshot orbs. Yes, sirree.
I realize I'm a very charming fellow and all that, Randy, but even so, methinks this greeting is just a wee bit over-enthusiastic. Could it be we're leading up to a touch?
Oh, Templar, old boy, leave us not be mercenary.
There's nothing I'd rather leave us not be.
My heart goes out to you, Simon, but not my hand. Say, not bad, I'll use that sometime.
You just did.
No, I mean in one of my books.
You did.
Did I?
Yes, in the case of the hangman's rope, or there's bad news tonight.
Say, that's right, so I did. What do you know? So, you read my books, I'm flattered.
I read that one.
Did you read my latest, The Case of the Dead Man's Limp, or he died with his boots on and they were too tight?
No, I missed that one.
Oh, too bad. Well, that's why I'm glad to see you.
Because I didn't read your book?
No, because maybe you can save my life. I could be killed on account of that book.
Just that one?
Oh, Templar, old boy, you cut me to the quick.
The Case of the Cut-Up Author, or Who Hacked the Hack?
Oh, it's no joke, Templar. You've heard of Kid Waldo?
The heavyweight? Yeah, I've heard of him.
Well, when he was just a punk, Georgie Garnett signed him up to manage him. Lifetime contract. Now the kid is in the higher brackets, and he's still tied to Garnett on terms he no like.
Well, can't he afford a lawyer?
He's got a lawyer, but Garnett swings a mean pen, no loopholes. The contract is ironclad.
And your heart bleeds for the kid, and you're afraid you'll bleed to death, I see.
Not exactly. You see, the kid figures an angle. Garnett has a wife. Oh, a lovely tomato, any way you look at her. And, brother, you look at her.
You mean the kid looks at her?
Precisely, and vice versa. You see, the kid is no bad piece of merchandise himself. 6'4" of solid muscle.
What about his face?
Well, his face retains much of its original shape in spite of coming in contact with some of the fanciest leather in the business.
Mm-hmm. Soft music, 2 hearts in 3/4 time. I get the picture.
Well, not all of it. Don't forget Garnett, husband.
Ah, yes, triangle. 3 hearts in 2/4 time.
And that's the kid's angle. Play up to the missus while she goes for him.
So he can use her to get better terms from Garnett, huh?
Mm-hmm. Only the way I wrote it, the kid and the missus slipped the manager a dose of rot.
The way you wrote it?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
You wrote a book based on Kid Waldo's shenanigans with Mrs. Garnett, added murder, and put it on the newsstand?
I did, so help me. And I do mean help.
I see. One of your real-life characters has read the book.
One of them, all of them.
Uh-oh.
Garnett wants to know, are his wife and his fighter really giving him the business? And if so, how do I know? My wife wants to know, how do I know? And the kid wants to know, how do I know?
Well, how do you know?
Templar, please. A writer protects his sources.
He better start protecting himself.
Well, that's where you come in.
How big did you say the kid is?
6'4".
That's where I go out.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
I don't want any part of it, Randy. You deserve what you're getting. You should have known better than to use a real situation.
Well, I didn't use their real names. You think I'm crazy?
No comment.
And I used a disclaimer. Any similarity, etc., you know.
Yeah, I don't know how they caught on.
But I used a switcheroo. The kid is a top heavyweight contender, but not in the book. I changed all that.
Oh, you changed all that?
Yeah, in the book, he's a lightweight.
Now, that's what I call a switcheroo.
Well, they're after my hide, so you've got to help me, Temple.
Well, what do you want me to do?
You expect me to tell the saint his business? Oh, he'll think of something.
I already have.
Oh, great, what?
I'm out of shaving cream, so I better go right down to the
drugstore. Templar, I appeal to you. In the name of our friendship, I'm not...
You know, Randy, I'm beginning to think of a few names for our friendship that aren't exactly appealing.
Oh, you wouldn't let me down. You couldn't.
I could try.
Is this Simon Templar speaking, my old pal, my buddy?
Oh.
The Simon Templar who saw me through the darkest hours of deadly literary tea?
Oh, Randy.
Who stood by me when the critics descended upon my first poor, defenseless brainchild? Who was the sole patron?
Stop it, Randy. You're breaking my heart. I'll do what I can for you, Randy.
Oh, good old Templar. I knew you'd come through.
But I still don't know just what you want.
Well, it's simple, old man. These jokers are sore, all of them. Maybe they're after my hide. Well, that's what I've got to find out.
In other words, one and all would thoroughly be delighted to see you dead. And you want to know if any of them are making specific plans for such delight, huh?
Exactly. If we know what they're planning, maybe we can stop it. If not...
You have a feeling all of a sudden any resemblance between you and a living person will be strictly coincidental.
Right.
Why don't you give that punching bag a rest? It's getting tired.
Who are you?
Simon Templar. I'm a friend of Randy Patterson.
Oh?
Oh, please, kid, I want to talk to you.
I got nothing to say.
Well, then allow me.
Look, mister, my lawyers are Smith and McCormick. It's in their hands. You want to talk, talk to them.
Oh, lawyers.
Yeah, lawyers. I've been libeled. I never did none of the things it says in that book.
You didn't?
No.
Well, then how do you know that the book's about you?
How do I know? How do I know?
Yeah, how do you know?
Why, everything that happens in that book is just exactly like a... Go chase yourself, will you?
Oh, kid, you're looking the wrong way. This is my head. That's the punching bag there, see?
Yeah.
So long, kid. My name is Simon Templar. I'm looking for George Garnett.
I'm Garnett.
Oh, do you always greet your guests with a gun?
Lately, when Monk isn't around.
Oh, who's Monk?
Bodyguard. Templar, eh? I've heard that name.
Well,
What do you want?
Well, look, I'd like to talk to you, but not in the doorway with a gun in my ribs.
All right. Come in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Templar. Sit down there.
Oh, thanks.
Have to take these blamed indigestion pills. Nervous stomach. Been under a strain lately. Terrible strain. By Jove, the saint. Of course.
That's right.
Yes, sure. Templar. Well, what brings you here, Templar?
Randy Patterson asked me to...
Patterson, that rat, that skunk, that murderer.
Murderer?
Accomplice, then.
So, who's been murdered?
Nobody yet.
Well, then why?
Well, but somebody may be. Any minute, any time.
Who?
Me. That's what he said in that blasted book, isn't it? Me!
But that doesn't mean...
Yeah, me! Well, I tell you, Tamper, if I get murdered, I'll hold Patterson partly responsible. So help me, I will.
Just because he said you might be killed, you have to thank him for the warning.
But he won't tell me where he got the information so I can really protect myself. No, I can't sleep. Where'd I put those pills?
You swallow them.
Oh. Do you know, Templar? Do you know where he got the information?
No.
If you knew, would you tell? Oh, yes, you would. I'll just bet. Why'd you come here, Templar?
I've been wondering what you plan to do, so
do?
I...
Do? What can I do? Look, I got a beautiful wife. We were... Well, we got along. At least I thought we did. Then he says, in the book, Well, you know.
Yes, I know.
Oh, confound it, Templar, a thing like that. How can you be sure? Felice says it's a lot of eyewash. That's what she says, a lot of eyewash. But I've been watching her and the kid. That's the trouble, gets you suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching. There's something between them. I know there is. But if only I could be certain. Are you sure I took those pills?
I'm sure.
I mustn't forget. Doc says I'm... Well, anyway, back to what I was saying. What was I saying?
You think there's something between Felice and the kid?
Yeah. Think. If only I was... Oh, who's kidding who? I know. And if Patterson is right about that, if he's right about that, well, don't you see?
See what?
The murder.
Oh.
He could be right about that, too. It comes next. Yeah, the murder comes next.
Not necessarily.
That's why I got Monk. Big guy. Used to be the kid's sparring partner. Where is he? He ought to be here. Say, look, you still haven't told me what you're doing here, Templar. What do you want?
Nothing more with you, Garnett, but I would like to see Felice. Is she at home?
No, at the Hotel Bennett.
Oh?
Yes, after this business, she moved out. Said I was too suspicious. Who wouldn't be suspicious? But I love her, Templar. That's the trouble. Why did he have to... Say, do you suppose there's a chance? Oh, no. Why do I keep trying to kid myself? Get out of here, Templar, will you? Get out.
I'm going, Garnett. Goodbye.
Hey, wait a minute. Where do you think you're going, Mr. Holt?
Monk!
Oh, Mr. Garnett, I didn't know you was here. I seen this fellow come out of the living room. I didn't know who he was.
Well, you might have asked before you broke my jaw.
Is it broke?
In at least three places.
Ah, you're kidding. Is she a friend of yours, Mr. Garnett?
Friend? Is anyone a friend in this dog-eat-dog world? I don't know. Help him up, Monk.
I'll help myself up, thanks.
All right, Monk, you want sparring practice? I'll be glad to accommodate you.
Wait a minute. What's she doing here, Mr. Garnett?
I'm not quite sure.
What, shall I throw him out?
Look, Muscle Brains, I'd already be out if you hadn't suddenly rushed to the rescue.
He's right, Monk, and speaking of rushing to the rescue, where were you?
Well, taking a nap. I've got to keep in condition.
I might have needed you.
Well, you got the Roscoe.
In that case, why do I ever need you? Say, that's a thought. Perhaps a... Well, Templar, what are you waiting for? I thought you were going.
Well, this has been such a delightful get-together, I can hardly tear myself away.
I can tear you away if you need any help.
I doubt it, Monk. From the look of you, you don't do so good when the other fellow's in a position to fight back.
If you was in the ring as long as I was, you'd be kind of banged up, too. But I was plenty good, brother, plenty good. If you want to know, even Joe Lewis was scared of me. Yeah, he was scared to fight me. How do you like that? Lewis was scared to fight me.
How do you know?
Well, did he ever fight me?
Not that I know of.
All right, then.
I see what you mean. Well, goodbye again, fellas. Come in.
Mr. Templar?
Well, look what I get, and I didn't even send in any box tops.
What?
I was expecting Randy Patterson, but he can wait. In fact, I hope he does. Come in.
Mr. Templar, you've got to help me.
Well, in that case, you'd better call me Simon.
All right.
And what do I call you?
Felice Garnett.
Oh, I'm so glad to meet you, Felice. In fact, I've tried to reach you several times today.
Really? Why?
Well, you see, I'm a friend of Randy Patterson.
I didn't know he had any friends.
Well, live and learn.
Yes, and I want to keep on living. That's why I came here. If you're a friend of Patterson's, maybe I made a mistake.
Not necessarily. What brings you here?
I heard you'd been to see my husband. I wondered what your interest in us was. I'm afraid I found out.
You said you wanted me to help you.
I did. When I heard you were involved, I thought you might be just the one to turn to. Well, that was before you told me about Patterson. Any friend of his is an enemy of mine.
Of course, but Felice, I believe in the old saying, love your enemy.
It's rather difficult.
Apparently, you need someone to help you. Why not give me a try? Just, what help do you need?
Well, it can't hurt to tell you. I'm being framed.
For what?
My husband's murder.
Has he been murdered?
Well, not yet, but...
You know, it's funny how everyone seems to take it for granted that he will be.
He will?
How do you know?
Well, that's what it's all about.
What?
Didn't you read the book?
Look, just because Randy wrote a book...
But that's why he wrote it, so my husband could be murdered.
Is that a fact?
Of course. Patterson wrote a book, thinly disguised, about me and my husband and Kid Waldo. In it, the kid and I plot to kill my husband. So George read it, got frightened. Now he suspects maybe we really are planning to kill him. He's even hired a bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you see? It's all a build-up. When George really is killed, naturally, it'll look like the kid and I did it. That's the whole idea.
And Randy's in on the plot.
Of course. The real killer hired him to throw suspicion on us.
Just who is the real killer?
I don't know. That's what I wanted you to find out.
Well, it's an interesting theory, Felice.
Theory?
I'll check to see if it's anything more than that.
You will? But if Patterson's your friend,
if he's pocketing blood money, this is the end of a not-so-beautiful friendship. And then, Felice, you and I could be friends.
Oh, Simon, if you help me, we'll be more than friends.
Aren't you forgetting just one small little item?
Am I? Oh, you don't mean the kid, do you? So you don't really believe there's anything between him and me?
Perish the thought.
Well, then.
But isn't there anything else now? Think hard.
Oh, I'm no good at guessing games, Simon.
What about your husband?
He isn't either.
I mean, before you and I give way to mad rapture, shouldn't we think about him?
Oh, so that's what's bothering you. But we don't have to worry about him. He's going to be murdered.
Now, don't look now, but isn't that what you want me to prevent?
His murder? Heavens, no. I just want you to prove I had nothing to do with it.
You'd better run along, Felice.
You're angry?
No.
Well, then what?
I feel a previous engagement coming on.
Now, don't tell me you're afraid of my husband.
No, Felice.
Then I don't understand.
I'm afraid of you.
That's right. We're going to dive right back into part two of The Frightened Author, The Saint, so that we have time for shameless promotion.
More fun.
Yep, here's part two.
Hello, Andy.
Templar, old boy. How are we doing?
I thought you were coming over here.
Well, I've been detained, and she didn't have a friend. But I'll be right over now if you've got something for me.
Well, I can tell you over the phone. It seems each of your opposition has picked up reinforcements.
How?
Well, the kid has a couple of lawyers.
Uh-oh. I was afraid of that.
And Garnett has a bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about Mrs. Garnett?
She has me.
Oh, should have known. Want to look at her and you...
I'm still running.
What?
But I'm afraid you're going to have to tell me who did your research for you, Randy.
Templar, I told you it was strictly confidential.
Well, you can either tell me now or the police later.
Police?
Mm-hmm, because your characters seem determined to act out the finale of your opus. Garnett is already shopping for a coffin.
But I just made up that stuff about the murder. I don't think the kid and the gal would really knock him off.
The consensus is that somebody would, so you'd better talk.
But I gave my word.
Did that ever stop you before?
Templar, to think that you should say such a thing. You who've been so close.
The trouble is, we've been too close.
All right, all right. I'm a no-good, a heel, a liar. I'd sell my soul for a mess of pottage, but at least, Templar, it's always been the best pottage.
Mm-hmm. Now, will you please stop talking and talk?
You want me to betray a confidence?
I thought we'd agreed it's in character.
How true. How very, very true. Well, the only...
Randy! 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 Believe in keeping you in shape, don't you, kid?
Oh, you again, Temple?
Yeah.
Look, why don't you get lost and take Patterson with you?
Patterson already got lost. That's why I'm here.
I don't get it.
I was talking to him on the phone. I heard shots. I called the police, and they called back from Patterson's place. He's dead.
I'm not surprised.
What do you know about it?
He had it coming.
From you?
Maybe. Only somebody beat me to it.
Is that so?
I got nothing more to say. You want conversation, see my lawyer.
Yeah, Smith and McCormick, I know. I may get around to it.
Yeah, do that.
Hello, police.
Oh. Oh, Simon.
I asked at the desk. They said I'd find you here in the bar.
That's where I am. Here at the bar. Isn't that funny?
Very.
Well, it isn't, and I'm awesome. Nobody's been here all afternoon except my friend, Tony. Tony's my favorite bartender. Tony! Hey, Mr. Templer.
Hi, Miss Templer. Charmed. Felice...
Simon, bartender. Tony hit me again. My friend's setting him up.
Okay, Miss Garnett.
Oh, thank you. Girls gotta keep up her spirits, Simon. What are you drinking?
I'll just watch you.
I know why you're here.
Good. Suppose you tell me. I've been wondering.
You want to know if I have an alibi? Well, I have. I came right here from your place, and I've been here ever since.
I see.
You hate me, don't you?
No.
Why do you keep spying on me?
I simply can't keep myself away from you.
I believe that.
If you believed it, I wouldn't say it.
Huh? You're just trying to mix me up.
You've already mixed me up. What's this alibi you were talking about?
Well, for the murder, silly.
Oh, and how do you know about that? It's not in the papers yet.
Really, Simon, for a smart man, you're the kid who phoned me. How else do you think I'd know?
He didn't waste any time, did he?
He knew I'd be interested.
Nice of him to be so considerate. I thought there was nothing between you two.
You are spying.
I'm curious.
Or maybe you're jealous. Jealous, Simon?
Terribly.
I wish I believed that.
What's between you and the kid?
I told you nothing.
He phoned you.
Well, he knew I'd be interested.
Oh, this is getting us no place.
We could get someplace, Simon. If only you'd stop acting so silly. So you could. Don't you like me? Just a little bit.
Yes, Felice, I like you.
Simon.
Just a little bit.
Simon.
Who do you think killed Randy Patterson, Felice?
Must we talk about this?
I'm beginning to think it's the safest subject. Don't you have any idea who might have done it?
No. I'm afraid I don't know what you want, Simon.
I'm afraid I do know what you want.
Well, get this. Isn't this cold?
Oh, hello, kid.
Oh, well, don't get the wrong idea, kid. We were just talking.
Yeah, it looks like.
How about the murder?
You were making with the moon eyes.
Well, now, kid, believe me, there's nothing between Simon and me, not a thing.
He's right, kid. There's nothing more between us than there is between her and, say, you, for example.
Huh?
And she has assured me your relationship was strictly platonic.
Felice, you told him that?
No, I don't get the wrong idea.
Wrong idea? I ain't got any idea. Well, what does it mean?
Plato was a philosopher, student of Socrates, who believed that if two people got...
A wise guy.
Very.
Kid, please don't be angry.
No. You play around with this guy, and then he starts cracking smart. I ought to push your face in.
Oh, kid, never strike a lady.
And you, too.
Or a gentleman, when the gentleman is me.
Oh, yeah? We'll see.
Yes.
All right, Felice, he missed.
But not this time.
Yes.
Sorry. Now, that only takes one.
Three strikes, you're out. Oh. Now, that's enough, kid. One more, and maybe I'd be out, so I better be running. See you around. Greet me with a gun, too, Monk. That's what I like about this place. So friendly.
You got no idea how friendly. Just the guy we want to see. Come in, pal. Come right in.
Now, that's a switch. Last time you were all for throwing me out.
Oh, that's before I learned what a sweet guy you was. Now, come on in.
Oh, with such a hearty invitation, I don't see how I can refuse.
You can.
You know, Monk, this is an unexpected pleasure. When I was here before, I got the impression Garnett was considering firing you.
Oh, he couldn't do that.
Where is he?
In back. He'll be in a minute. Now, you want to see why he couldn't fire me?
Why?
On account of there's some things I can do so much better. Like, for instance, this.
Oh, you kick so beautifully, Monk. Your mother must have been a rockette.
Don't try to hit back. This Roscoe's looking at your belly.
All of a sudden, I'm everybody's target for tonight. What's the idea?
Mr. Garnett wanted to know how much Patterson told you. He asked you nice, real nice. I don't ask so nice, but I get answers. Well, you want to talk now, or shall we dance?
I have nothing to say.
We'll see about that. Still got nothing to say?
I'm beginning to think of a few things, but I have an idea you wouldn't care for them.
You kill me. Maybe I can do the same for you sometime, like right now, for instance, unless you're ready to talk.
I'll think about it.
Well, while you're thinking, put up your hands over your head. Hurry up. Don't forget the Roscoe.
My old friend? How could I?
That's it. And now, just to help you make up your mind, here's... Oh. Well, hello, Mr. Garnett.
What's going on here? Hello, Templar.
Greetings, Mr. Garnett.
You don't want to talk, Mr. Garnett. I've been trying to change his mind.
I'll go right ahead. Don't let me stop you.
I'm afraid it's no use. He's a stubborn type.
Yes, so it would seem, Monk. So it would seem. Well, Templar, to what are we indebted for this return visitor?
I've seen Felice. I thought you might like to know how she's getting along.
Why should I care? Does she care about me? Does she ever even call? Don't stand there with your hands like that, Templar. It looks ridiculous.
It's Monk's idea.
You heard Mr. Garnett, Templar. Put him down.
Well, if you insist.
How is she, Templar?
Who? Oh, Felice. Fine.
I was afraid of that.
Afraid?
I'd like to think she needed me. I've got to put her out of my mind, Templar, completely. Only answer.
Tell me something, Garnett.
What?
Where were you this afternoon?
Home.
All afternoon?
Yes. Why?
Was anyone with you?
I was.
The whole time?
Yes, except for another nap. He likes to keep in condition.
Only I didn't sleep so good. I was only gone a few minutes, just a few minutes.
Half hour or so? Why, Templar? Did you try to reach me?
No good enough. I'd have heard the phone.
If you were here.
But I told
you.
So
you did. Just a minute.
What are you going to do?
Just
this. Templar. Why, you knocked out Monk.
Yeah, so it seems. Funny, I didn't hit him very hard.
You aimed at his chin. Always was his weakness. Had a wicked right, but he could never take it. Round heels. That's his trouble. I could have made a champ out of him if it hadn't been for those... Oh, but that's neither here nor there. Why'd you do it?
He slugged me before when I wasn't looking. This evens the account. And it gives me a chance to get his rascal.
Oh?
I want to point something out to you, Garnett. I didn't want Monk interfering.
What?
Randy Patterson doesn't live too far from here. I believe you could make it in 15 minutes.
Perhaps so, perhaps so. What are you driving at?
15 there, 15 back, half hour would have been long enough.
For what?
For you to have gone to his place and killed him.
Killed him? But do you mean have somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't pretend I'm not pleased, but surely you don't really think that I... Why, that's absurd.
Well, you could have while Monk was sleeping.
No, you don't understand. It's at least 15 minutes to Patterson's place, at the very least. If you hurry, race like mad.
How do you know?
I've been there, but not today. But you know, you said yourself.
All right, 15 minutes, round trip in half an hour. That's all you needed.
But, well, that was just round figures. I'm sure Monk couldn't have been out of the room for, 20 minutes at most. You'll see, when he comes to, we'll ask him. 20 minutes at the most.
Uh-huh, I'm sure he'll say whatever you want him to, but we'll see.
Say, I just thought of something.
What?
Has there been any report about the murder yet? Newspaper, radio?
No, not so soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Mr. Templar, how come you happen to know about it?
A nice point, Garnett, but notice what big ears I have, Grandpa. I overheard.
Overheard?
In telephone. Come on, Monk, wake up. Wake up. Mm. Come on.
Hey, where is he? Hey, it was an accident. I slipped. I hit my head. You didn't...
Sure, Monk, sure. What big ears you have, too, Monk. Genuine cauliflower. How did you hear about it?
Hear about what?
The murder.
Who, me? I didn't...
Obviously, Garnett didn't know about the murder, or he wouldn't have stuck his neck out by admitting you were out of the room. He didn't start crawling until I mentioned the murder.
That's right, Templar. You noticed...
But that... I also noticed that Monk was very busy trying to build the alibi before I mentioned the murder.
Well, sure, I was trying to protect Mr. Garnett. After all, I got a great sense of loyalty.
No, Monk, you haven't got any sense of loyalty or any sense. How did you know he needed protection unless you knew about the murder?
Of course. How did he know?
Unless he were the murderer.
Are you crazy?
Maybe, Monk. But the alibi you were preparing for Garnett would have worked for you, too. If you were here with Garnett, you couldn't have committed the murder. Isn't that why you insisted you were gone only a few minutes?
My head hurts. I got nothing to say.
But, Templar, what motive would Monk have?
There's one thing we've all been wondering about, Garnett. How did Randy find out about your wife and the kid? Must have been from someone who was close to the kid. Say, a sparring partner, for instance.
Ha-ha-ha-ha! Templar, you've hit it.
I think so. Monk gave Randy the information. Then when things got hot, Monk was afraid Randy might snitch, so he killed him to silence him.
That's it, Templar, that's it. Monk, you scoundrel, you villain, you...
Shut up.
Monk, that's insubordination.
Now, come on, Monk. You and I are going to police headquarters.
Who says
so? Monk, don't try to get tough. Maybe Joe Lewis is as scared of you, but I ain't. Come on, let's go.
You have been listening to another adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, take a memo to the future. The date, make it 1958. The message, cash in your United States savings bonds. Take your savings plus the additional dollar for every three invested and, well, you finish the memo. Perhaps you'll end it with a home or a business of your own, with a college education for the children, with financial security. Whatever your dream for the future, you can make it come true with a program of regular saving. And there is no surer, more profitable way of saving than through the purchase of United States savings bonds. Remember these points. United States savings bonds are safe, they are profitable, they are convenient to buy, and they are redeemable at any time at the purchase price plus accumulated interest. If employed, you can buy United States savings bonds where you work by having your employer set aside an amount each week. If self-employed, buy your savings bonds through your bank on a bond-a-month basis. Make that dream come true. Remember, automatic saving is sure saving. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
written by Jerome Epstein. Our cast included Betty Lou Gerson, Bonnie Phillips, Stanley Farrar, Edmund McDonald, and Tom Brown. The music was composed and conducted by Vaughn Dexter. The Saints, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production, His Kind of Woman. All you Saints fans will be glad to know that the Saints comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley.
Saints comic book.
Nightbeat, the story of Chicago after dark. Listen as Randy Stone searches the city for adventure and a story of mystery and intrigue. Nightbeat is another great action-packed program. So be sure to listen tomorrow night and every Monday night to Nightbeat. Next, Sam Spade cuts a caper. Then hear Dorothy Maynor on NBC.
Only on Erie House Radio and NBC do you get dueling slide whistles. Only here. Only here. You know what else you get? A moral. House Radio presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never bet against a boxer. You might get boxed. There you go.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
I was boxed once and woke up in Indianapolis.
There you go.
Tomorrow night, we got more radio. That's right, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater with a story called The Imposter. As we continue, stories about writers, reading, writing, and
arithmetic. With an original air date of March 22nd, 1977.
Ooh.
Wow. Already? Cool.
What a lad of 17.
Good year for Imposter. You were 17?
It was a very good year.
And then when we hit the 8 o'clock hour at the end of the Erie House, what happened?
Summer night. I don't know.
Oh, Horrible Horror. Yeah, that thing.
On the Twitches,
Horrible Horror, starring Garth Gold, blah, blah, to you all and all that jazz. And I'm going to do the makeup. I'm going to do it. I don't know if my internet service provider is going to cooperate or not. So far, no. But, you know, I'm in a rowboat off the coast of Cuba, so I don't know.
No. Then maybe you'll pick up a strong signal offshore somewhere.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday.
Maybe.
You need to join me. As you say, next Tuesday, you need to join me on The Vortex. One of our new movies. The 12 Angry Men. And it's the original television version from 1954, 56, something like that, with Bob Cummings. Won an Academy Award for that. So there we go.
Uh-huh.
Tune in. Brand new show. Hey.
Yeah.
Yay.
And
Bob
then,
Cummings, later co-starred. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just
Bob Cummings
say,
show.
Yeah. Next week.
Bob Cummings, later co-starred with Joe Newmar.
And now the movies, folks.
That's right. Next weekend.
Drive-in.
It's another drive-in. It's been a while. So we'll do that next weekend here on Erie House Radio.
Hitchcock double feature. Woo.
Yeah. Woo.
I was saying Bob Cummings co-starred with Julie Newmar in... what was it? My Robot the Maid or something like that?
Living
My
Doll.
Son the Vampire.
Living Doll.
The Living Doll.
Living Doll.
That was it. Yeah, that was
Yeah.
All right, don't forget. With Weirdness on the Vortex and Gar tomorrow after our show on the Twitch.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Thank you, Fuzzbank.
Can
thank you, little
you
mom.
Dig it?
Thank you, Chris. My brother, Chris. right in the...
Good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't stand in front of the back of the door, Dale.
Yes.
That's right.
I got a small second wind through the midway through the last segment, but I was getting a bit beat up here.
What was he?
Yeah. I had collie nose in my face this morning.
Yeah.
And now I have kitty
nose. That's cold. That's cold. Yeah, I get kitties all the time, but yeah, that's a longer, colder nose.
Kitties plural. We want things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Get up. Wait. It's 2 a.m. What's the matter with you people?
Listen to us sing.
Feed me now. Clean my kitty pan. Do all those things. And then I'll sleep during the day, okay? Let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah.
That's what you'll have to switch to when you retire, Dave, working at night with the cats so you can sleep. I work with
the
cats.
Hey, just working on my third show in the 3 months here, and got the filming done for the hosting segment. So we're going to have an Al Klesch spotlight, and a lot of fun. There's a lot of neat stuff in there, and the movie we'll have for that is a Studio One presentation of The Laugh Maker that has Art Carney and Jackie Gleason in dramatic roles.
No, that ought to be cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And plus, lots of Al Klesch doing a lot of the funny things that he's done.
Sweet. That's coming up soon, and we'll probably get to see that on the Vortex, yes? Or is that the one you're showing Tuesday?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
No, we're showing Tuesday, the one on Tuesday with Julie and Jay Bach and myself and, Julie Majerna.
Ah.
Julie Majerna,
ah.
Yeah.
Ah.
And 12 Angry Men, Tuesday on the Vortex.
Ooh.
Really kind of excited.
Last
3 months,
I've
done
a
show. Yeah. So it's, it's tough because I'm still having the same schedule at work, but I'm somehow losing a little extra sleep to get these done. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Sleep's just a waste of time anyway.
At least you don't have a shark swimming down your street. That type.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, has the weather died down for you yet, Gar?
It never died up. we were not in the path of this. We had rain for 2 days, and it wasn't crazy. We had tropical winds more yesterday and the day, but that was about, so it was like a big windy thunderstorm. But we were not experiencing the full brunt of a hurricane here because we're north central Florida, up in the way up in the middle and in the north part of the state. And the storm came up, hit the bottom of the state, went right over the state, and then went into the ocean. And it was way north of me. So there was a little bit of impact. I went out today and raked some leaves, and that was it.
Yeah.
That is weird because I guess Orlando, which is what, only about an hour away from you, they got like 14 inches of rain dumped on them.
Yeah,
and that's weird. You can be only that far away, and, there's a weird thing about Florida. It's like the sun can be shining, can be raining on one side of the street, not the other. It's really weird. So we get odd weather. And, this afternoon, sun was out, so.
Yep. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. We had to get the cows out of the trees.
Cows out of the trees and alligators out of the trees and, all that.
Yeah.
Weird how that works out.
I would think gators would just dive down deeper in the water. Isn't that safer for them?
Well, that was a goofy thing. Someone showed a picture of an alligator, walking around. Well, of course they are. It's their weather. Nice, good, swampy weather,
Yeah, what am I going to drown? I don't think so.
They came out, they walked around.
Yep. Yeah, home sweet home. Your home is now my home. Get out.
Yeah, right.
Get out.
Gators are cute.
I'm waiting
when
for...
Little, when they're
oh,
little.
There it is.
When gators are cute, they are the cutest little things, and they
toast
make this
is
cute
ready.
Little...
No, they're not. Oh, it's ready again.
No, they.
I know.
Baby
gators are never cute.
Yes, they are. They're adorable when they're little. They make the cutest little noise. Instead of that noise, or whatever that is.
Chewing off your little toe. Yeah. No.
Oh, no. They're adorable.
No.
Everything at some
point. Yeah, if you're a mother gator.
Except for insects, almost everything is cute at one point or another in its life. Except for insects.
Yes.
They wear their ugly pride.
We are previewing and getting ready to toss it out that we're going to do the movie Tarantula.
Ooh.
And that's a bug I never want walking on my hands, I tell you. I mean, they don't do much. They're not – the venom isn't bad. It won't kill you.
Clint Eastwood is
but,
in
yeah.
it. Clint Eastwood is in it.
Is he? Are you
yes,
sure?
He's one of the pilots. At the end.
Oh, for 2 seconds. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. No big role. He had a very small role in Revenge of the Creature. But he actually had some speaking roles in more than one in not having his face covered by a flight mask.
Yeah,
but,
covered by a mask. And yeah.
No, he's wearing a lab coat and he's working in a lab. And
oh, yeah, I remember that. And then
cute
and then he gets killed and they take him out.
No, he doesn't get killed.
Right. Oh, he didn't get killed? Oh, man.
No.
Maybe that was in his contract.
No. But he's in Revenge of the Creature.
Dale, have you ever had a tarantula walk across your palm and up your arm?
A tarantula? No.
No. Dave, you?
No. I'm not guilty of that, no.
A Lithuanian, yes, but a spider, no.
Well, hello.
I don't know what that means. I just don't know what that means. I have never had the opportunity to handle tarantulas much.
Right. Now, when I was a kid, we had daddy long-legged spider type things. I don't even know if there's a real spiders, but not a problem. They were cool. They'd walk all over you. It was great, you know.
Yeah.
Until a giant one showed up. Yeah. Until a giant one showed up in Johnny Quest, we weren't worried about it, right?
Yeah, then it was over. Wasn't that Zim's robot? Wasn't that Dr. Zim's robot?
Yeah. They fired a cannon at it. It just blinked. Yeah, that one.
Oh, yeah, that was in the in the opening credits. They would show that over and over.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep firing a rocket, and it just blinks at them and says, you want
black, something? Like, it was like a big black daddy long legs with a... And where its body was, it was like a giant eye. Arr, be looking.
Yes,
I love
that. That was
Quest.
That was it. I did too.
It was good adventure.
Yeah, Johnny
good
Quest
music.
Was a good one.
Yeah, art wasn't too bad. The animation was.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay for the
it
day.
Was all, to the best of my knowledge, it wasn't farmed out outside of the U.S. I believe the animation was done here in the U.S.
American.
I think. American. That's right. American. That's right. We like our American stuff until it got, it was cheaper to go outside. Then the problem with it going outside, there's nothing wrong with that, but you need to send someone over with them and go, these are the right colors. This is what the person looks like. This is, you know, the character and all that.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it gets lost in translation. The color schemes are wrong, or there's something odd about the character, you know, whatever.
Something is awry.
Something's awry.
Yes.
Catcher in the Rye, that guy, yeah. We don't like him.
Don't look at me. I use sourdough. Yeah.
Do you now?
Yeah.
Oh, how does this work? I tell you. The older you get, the harder it is to open products you get from the store.
Oh, yeah.
Everything has a... Oh, my gosh. What's going on?
Everything's childproof.
I know. And now we're the child.
Yeah. And you can't even tear it open with your teeth because you're losing teeth. Ah, it's terrible.
I know. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny to think the first president of the United States was a toothless guy. Oh, George? Yeah, those teeth weren't his own.
There's a reason he couldn't tell a lie. He couldn't talk with his teeth.
He couldn't speak. Yeah, horrible when that happens.
It's horrible. Oh. As in horrible, horrible.
He's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kids, I'm going to wrap it up.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
If and I may.
Yes.
Well, in that case, turn off the house lights. Turn on the three spotlights. To the center of the floor comes Mr. James Durante.
Good night. Yay. Good night. So long, guys. Blah, blah.
Good night.
It's time to
say good
night. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
What for this sake?
Now we can talk about it.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same.
And Inca Dinka do.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Your choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.
Yikes.
I'll join you.
We shall be waiting for your answer.
I'll join you.
Yeah, we're in.
The decision
that's my answer.
Rests with you.
I'm joining you. That's my answer.
We're in. Hey, come back.
Gort Beringa.